You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And good morning, 8:06 on this Wednesday morning, July 2nd, 2025. Nice to have you here up north. Parker Olson over in Madison Studio A2. Earl Ingram is standing by. We'll have Melissa Baldoff a little later this hour with Climate Check. All about keeping the cows comfy and cool while still having solar farms going up around Wisconsin. We'll tell you how they can actually accomplish both things. Brittany Merlot is off today, so keep an eye, or keep an ear, I guess I should say, on your local Civic Media station for your local forecast as we head through the end of the week. We will have a regular show tomorrow, and then on Friday we'll have a best of show. And we didn't get to hear from Melissa Kay today, but if you have not caught up with Pigeon Quest with Melissa Kay, you're going to want to listen to Friday's show as we recap what has brought us to the point of her almost having possession of a rescue pigeon that she wants to adopt. From the text line, Jim in Brookfield, another good guest, Pat, referring to our conversation on the transgender policy for the WIAA. Jim writes, "It's always amazing what can be learned when people actually do some research and learn the facts, as opposed to making blind assumptions based on a knee-jerk executive order." Conversely, on the text line, Tom from Hartford says, "Sadly, the longer the left hangs on to this, the longer the left will lose close elections. Regular people will never warm up to this. Please see reality." Tom, I love that you're a listener, but here's your lecture. You please see reality and stop referring to yourself as a regular person. There are plenty of regular people out here that don't look like you, don't love the same people as you, and also don't get on their high horse about who's regular and who's not. Some people are willing to lose elections to stand up for what's right. The Pledge of Allegiance ends with liberty and justice for all, not just for the regular people. All right, let's bring in Earl Ingram, and we're going to start, unfortunately, on a bit of a down note on things happening in the Milwaukee area with the shooting death of a Milwaukee police officer, and just the blow that that deals to a community anytime, but this officer in these circumstances as well. Earl, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm fine, but again, we have not had a chance to talk about this case yet. I'm glad you're here for this so that we can properly convey, you know, what happened in this case. And sadly, this is something that has become all too familiar as we, you know, continue to allow guns to run rampant on our streets. Can you give folks around the state just kind of an overview of what happened the other day?
Well, you know, a much beloved officer, Mr. Kendall, Officer Kendall Corder, and Christopher McCray, two young officers who have dedicated their lives to service in the city of Milwaukee and very well loved and known in the community, a young man who grew up in the city of Milwaukee and then made the decision to join the force and do great work, and a lot of great work in, you know, building bridges. And so when I say much beloved officers, they were every bit of that. And so they worked with a lot of young children, and certainly when people saw them, they were much beloved. I know when I was a young man, we used to know the officers who were in our community as they were a part of the fabric of the community. These young men recreated that in their stint with the Milwaukee Police Department. And, you know, a wayward young man, Tremaine Jones, 22 years old, got into a situation where he and his girlfriend, he was unfaithful. And this just goes to show the insanity that goes on in this nation. and the impact of having so easily accessibility to guns. Tremaine Jones apparently was unfaithful to his girlfriend, and you know, and she called, you know, some people that she knew to basically go after her boyfriend for being unfaithful. He brings a gun. The guy that she calls brings a gun, and they begin to shoot it out. You know, I mean, the Wild Wild West, OK Corral, all of that insanity that happens, unfortunately, too often in this country. And that situation escalated. And so the police were called, as what happens normally in a situation like that. And they come and they, you know, we're talking about dark. They can't see. They don't know what's going on. And, you know, people point to, they ask them about where the shots came from, and they point to the alley. And Tremaine Jones, a 22-year-old with a, you know, criminal record, is hiding in the bushes. He had fired his weapon at the other guy. And he claims, again, Tremaine Jones, that he heard them coming through the alley. He thought it was the guy he had shot at who had shot at him. And he, you know, shot 16 times at these officers. And, you know, with a high-powered weapon that nobody should have on the street. And unfortunately took the life of, you know, this officer, Kendall Corder. And I'll tell you, man, I've lived through a lot of these things, but our community is taking this harder than I think I ever recall them taking a law enforcement officer losing his life.
No, because again, when we look at every other developed nation on earth, you know what? They have infidelity. They have love triangles. They have domestic disputes. What they don't have is such ready access that somebody feels like it's a good idea to wave at or even shoot guns at, you know, at an ex-girlfriend, at somebody that's trying to have a disagreement with you, and get into the situation where, you know, you think you're firing at somebody as if that's okay, but it actually turns out to be these officers instead. And again, the only foundation there is the guns and the prevalence of them. Everything else exists everywhere else in society. So let's not be blaming society. Let's blame that culture of people everywhere who just can't see that the resolution of this problem is to give up this worship of firearms.
Well, you're talking to a guy who is 70 years old, who, well, actually 71, who had never had a gun in his hand until about a year and a half ago that I went through the FBI training, you know, program. I was asked if I would want to do that, and for the first time in my life, I had a weapon in my hand. I would have never probably ever had one, and it went to my grave. My father never had weapons in the house, so I've never had them. My children have never had them, and my nieces and nephews likewise. I'm not opposed to guns. People have a right to guns, but what I am opposed to are laws like those that gun show loophole, where people can sell guns to people like Tremaine Jones and not be held accountable. You know, if you're going to buy a gun from a licensed dealer, there's background checks and 48-hour waiting periods, but you can then take that gun and sell that gun to anybody you want to without any background. And that's how so many guns get into the hands of people like Tremaine Jones. That's what I'm opposed to. That legislation needs to change. And the easy accessibility to guns to even 14-year-old children in the community where I live, is that at some point in time, it's got to come to an end.
And when you talked about the number of shots that were fired, it brings up the prevalence of extended magazines that carry so many more bullets, and extended magazine was among the weaponry and accessories that were recovered from Jones and from others at the scene here. So I mean the evidence is clear of what it is that allowed this situation to get out of hand. So when this does, and you have, like you said, an officer who was so well regarded and is, killed in the line of duty, where does a community go from there? You obviously, you have the funeral, you have the remembrance, and what can we do to just not let it fade away and forget until this happens again?
Well, that's the horrible thing about it. It will fade away. It will be forgotten until the next time. You know, it doesn't happen as often as it used to. But even one time is too much pain for a community that's already in pain to have to deal with, especially with the holiday coming up.
Yeah, especially with any holiday coming up and a long weekend for this family, for this officer. We're talking to Earl Ingram about stories that he's following in Southeast Wisconsin. Got 3 minutes here until the break, and so let's change gears. Let's get just a little lighter here and talk about your thoughts on all the roster moves by the Milwaukee Bucks. And then we're going to take a break. Some of you folks will have a local update. Others will come back here and we'll talk about Attorney General Josh Call suing the Department of Education about, the impact on mental health for our youth. That'll be after the break. But before we go to that break, again, lots of moves by the Milwaukee Bucks. What were your thoughts on that, Earl?
Well, you're talking to a guy who remembers when the Bucks first came to Milwaukee, and it really, nothing ever surprises me with the Bucks and the Bucks management. They are fearless. They don't ever stay pat. And I will tell you, the release of Damian Lillard and swallowing that $112 million is a sign of just how aggressive the Milwaukee Bucks are. It opens the door. The addition of Miles Turner, a great center. I mean, to replace Brook Lopez, who wasn't mobile, with Miles Turner, who's also a great outside shooter, but a lot more mobile, is going to open the door for Giannis to do a lot more things. The re-signing of Gary Trent and Porter and others pencils the Bucks in now as somebody to be reckoned with in the coming season. A lot more athletic, a lot younger, and it's amazing what they've been able to do. They were just locked in with somebody with no draft choices, mm-hmm. and basically no future. The Bucks do a wonderful, wonderful job.
Yeah, they do. I mean, again, there were plenty of folks after this last first-round elimination were willing to say, well, that's it. The full rebuilding is going to start. But, rebuilding doesn't mean you tear the whole thing down. Let's consider this a really good remodel that's in the works here. So we've got Earl Ingram here that we're talking with. We'll continue that for some of you. Others will get a local update. And when we're all back together in about 15 minutes or so, we will talk to Melissa Baldoff with our climate check for this week. And later, James Kelly will talk about some of the stories he's covering for Civic Media across Northwest Wisconsin. This, of course, is all followed by Matt and Air on Air. Coming up with Dan Schaefer at 9:30, and then just after 10 o'clock, Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. And then Todd Alba's on from 2 to 4 today, and you can join me there, along with Trigvi Olsen from the Lincoln Project, joining Todd Alba at just after 2 o'clock this afternoon here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Doubleheader baseball today with the Milwaukee Brewers. After being rained out last night, they are in New York to take on the Mets. So last night's game has been rescheduled as a day game today. Pregame begins at 11:35 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Freddie Peralta pitching for the Brewers in Game 1. Game 2, the regularly scheduled game, pregame at 5:35 this evening with Jacob Mizorowski on the mound pitching against the Mets for the Milwaukee Brewers. Two doses of Brewers baseball today here on Civic Media. Also coming up on the Maggie Dawn Show this afternoon from 4 to 6, a special, Freedom's Under Attack, with David Velker, a UW Green Bay professor of humanities and history, Howard Schweber, a UW professor of American politics and political theory, and Kathy Kramer, a UW professor and chair of letters and science in American politics. And then Nightlight with Pete Schwabe from 6 to 8 tonight at 6:30, Milwaukee film critic Matt Mueller, and 7:35 tonight, director Wendy Schneider, all joining Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Let's continue on things with Earl Ingram now and talk about some of the things he's watching in Southeast Wisconsin, which I know Earl also includes some of the work being done primarily in, some of the work that's being done by Attorney General Josh Call in terms of the restrictions by Donald Trump. And Earl, I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted here because I'm just seeing the breaking news that a split state Supreme Court today has just ruled and invalidated an 1849 law that had been interpreted as banning all abortions. It was a 4-3 ruling. So writing for the liberal majority, Justice Rebecca Dallet found that changes made to abortion laws over the past 50 years implicitly repealed the 1849 law. This is according to a bulletin put out by WisPolitics. Dallet writes, "We conclude that comprehensive legislation enacted over the last 50 years, regulating in detail the who, what, where, when, and how of abortion, so thoroughly covers the entire subject of abortion that it was meant as a substitute for a 19th century near total ban." The conservative justices, Rebecca Bradley, Brian Hagedorn, and Annette Ziegler, all dissented. More will be coming about that later. So obviously, Earl, you and I both know that that 1849 law has been watched by a lot of folks and has now been thrown out by the state Supreme Court. That's going to get a lot of people talking.
You know, it's some things that's just nauseating to me. And, you know, this constant conversation about what the forefathers thought and what they believed is always open to interpretation. They're not here anymore. And so the last time I checked, they're not here anymore. And and so, you know, it's always going to be open to conjecture on both sides. And in your and my lifetime, that this is ever settled. And so it's going to continue to be an ongoing conversation, Pat. Sometimes the left is going to win. Sometimes the right is going to win. And that, well, really, to be honest with you, I don't know whoever wins in this kind of conversation, because I'm a person who believes that people have a right in a nation that professes to be a nation that gives people freedoms to make decisions, even though those decisions might not agree with us. But in the end, Pat, what is the nation and what it was founded under if people don't have freedoms and the rights that, you know, people fought, bled, and died for?
Exactly. So we'll have much more on the Wisconsin Supreme Court throwing out that 1849 statute throughout the day, of course, here on Civic Media. But getting back to what I was saying before, I noticed the breaking news here, and that is Attorney General Josh Call suing the Department of Education for the Trump administration. And in this case, Earl, it deals with, you say, the mental health care that can be provided. Oh, it looks like we lost Earl there.
Well,
there you go. Go ahead, Earl. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was, you know, I thought we was having some problems on our end, but I guess what I wanted to talk about a little bit was, as you stated earlier, the decision of Josh Call to join others from across the state, across the nation, in, you know, suing this Trump government for taking away, you know, just $5 billion or more that's been kind of allocated after some horrific shootings in schools since, you know, 2022 or so, to deal with mental health and mental illness of young people across this country. And if you look at the reason and the rationale why, the Federal Department of Education took this took issue with some of the training that was being taught in the mental health professionals about systemic racism, and you know, and the focus of race-related stress that occurs in, you know, some communities across this nation. So because of that, and that part of the training, even though the training is much broader than just that issue, that's reason enough to take those funds away from people and children and families across this entire nation. $5 billion to deal with mental health issues. And if ever there was a time, Pat, that our nation is struggling with mental health issues with young people, it's now, with the internet and all of those things. They don't take any of those things into consideration. They just move unilaterally to eliminate things based on diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yeah, and it's a particularly ugly chapter that I think we're going to look back on, this attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Earl Ingram, as always, I really appreciate the visit, appreciate your insight. Hope you have a good family-friendly 4th of July weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
You as well.
All right. Thank you, Earl. When we come back, we're going to have Melissa Baldoff here. We will, of course, talk about climate issues, but also in her role, she's got a political hat that she wears much of the time, and we'll ask her about this state Supreme Court decision throwing out the 1849 law. Coming up next, you're up north. I am very thankful that Melissa Baldoff is willing to come in here once a week and talk about climate issues. It's a subject near and dear to her heart, but she wears many hats as a consultant, as a political strategist, and more. And so we're probably going to spend more time in this segment on a couple of other matters, and then we'll get to a little bit of our climate check and the happy cows that can result from a little bit of creativity when it comes to solar farms that are out there. But Melissa is going to help us first deal with the new budget deal right after we talk about the breaking news of the state Supreme Court throwing out the 1849 law that some had considered to be an abortion ban. Melissa, good morning. What's your take on the state Supreme Court throwing that 1849 law out, kicking it to the curb?
Good morning. It is a good morning. And, you know, this is exactly what, you know, I think so many people wanted to see happen, was a fair and impartial court invalidating a law that, you know, is almost 200 years old and really impacted the rights of women to make our own healthcare decisions. So this is, you know, this is a law that predates us even, you know, just knowing about germs, right? I mean, this is ridiculous that this has been on the books for so long. And it is just an incredible win for the people of this state to have women's rights and freedoms restored by this court.
Well, and on top of that, for all this talk about, you know, originalism and what founders intended and all that, you know, why would we take away from the notion that we have had continuously changing government, continuously changing society for these past 150, 200 years? And what the progressive justices were saying was, look, there have been all of these other changes to abortion law over the years, so many different changes that it basically can't help but overrule the stuff that was written earlier, because again, elections have consequences. You have different people in charge each time. They've made these changes of law. Looking at this, and I've skimmed it as quickly as I could, and I have to say, this AI summary that Tony has helped put together and shared with us is, I think, pretty good. It says the court erased the state's near total criminal abortion ban as a matter of statutory construction, not constitutional law. Abortions may resume within the detailed and sometimes onerous regulatory framework enacted since the 1970s. They note that the legislature retains full authority to tighten or loosen that framework, and the ruling invites renewed legislative deliberation rather than ending the debate. And again, Melissa, it's just a matter of, you know, again, we, with all the respect you can have for your founders, they don't get to tie our hands. We still get to live in the here and now, whether you're talking about muskets versus assault weapons or women's role in society and the rights they have now versus then.
Exactly. You know, this is one of those perfect illustrations of why the, you know, Constitution is a living document. It was always intended to adapt and change with the times, and the framers could ever have conceived of the society we have now. I think if you took, you know, the framers and dropped them in today's society, you know, their heads might explode when they saw, you know, all of the technology we have and where we've come, you know, and that's just the whole point, is that it was always intended to be a document that was changed, was adapted. The only thing that isn't supposed to change is, you know, the core principles and beliefs of, you know, life, liberty, and justice for all. That's the foundation, not, you know, any other specific prescriptive words necessarily, because those can change and should change and have changed. And the abortion law here is, you know, a great example. It's, you know, kind of like the, you know, ship of Theseus, right? And that's, I think, where we've gotten with this, the end of this case, right? Is like where it started, it's changed so much. Is it even that thing that it started as anymore? And it's really not, you know, it's changed so many times what the, you know, what the law is on abortion and what the ruling is. So, you know, I think that this is a great day for women, you know, to make their own healthcare decisions again, even though we know that there are limits there, but, you know, protect things like IVF, which would have been completely at risk here, and make sure that, you know, women and families have the right to make their own decisions about what's best for them.
Yeah. Folks that want to start their own theocracy can do it, you know, someplace else, because right here, every election matters. And yes, we live in a time where the next election is always the most important election. The one that switched control of this state Supreme Court was the most important election of its time. Prior to that, the re-election of Governor Tony Evers was the most important election of its time, which takes us to our next subject, the new state budget deal. Governor Evers worked it out with Republicans who control the legislature. It will be a very bipartisan vote later today in the Assembly and the Senate, with Democrats voting yes and no, Republicans voting yes and no, and people having very strong feelings on depending on what end of the spectrum they're coming from. And I'm not saying all that to say that this is a good deal, Melissa, but again, if Tony Evers had not won election, you know, the way this would look under a Governor Tim Michaels administration is a hell of a lot different.
It absolutely is. And, you know, this isn't the budget that the governor wanted. The budget the governor wanted is the one he proposed. But this is, I think, this is a very good deal considering what the alternative was. And this, I think, shows the incredible commitment of the governor and his staff. I want to make sure to really shout out my former colleagues in the governor's office and throughout state government for their work on this, because yes, it is the leaders and the principals, you know, making a lot of these deals, but it's also an incredible, incredible amount of work by the staff to get there. And their commitment to this is just unparalleled. But I applaud the governor and our Democrats leader getting there, because this is, I do believe, the best deal we could get out of this legislature. But at the same time, I respect and value and support the Democrats who are going to vote against this, because it's not what we deserve, and it's not the best budget for the state. It's the best budget we could get right now. but it's the best budget week. It's the best. Yeah, but it's not the best budget for the state. So, you know, I think that they are correct to, you know, hold the line for themselves and to for their constituents and to draw the contrast of, you know, what is going to be the in the state budget and what could be and should be in the state budget. And they'll really have a chance to demonstrate that when Democrats are in the majority in, you know, a couple years here with the budget. That's the goal. That's what we think is going to happen. Democrats taking back the Senate and an incredibly good chance to take back the Assembly. And the budget that will pass in 2 years because of that is going to look a whole lot different than this one. And it's going to be a whole lot better for the people of this state. So I think this was, you know, the right choice, even though it's a very difficult one. But Governor Evers has proven time and time again that he is willing to make the difficult choices that need to happen.
We're talking to Melissa Baldoff, and we've covered the legislative matters, the court matters. Now let's get to something that really matters: happy cows and the.
Which I gotta just say, I still take a lot of issue with the whole marketing campaign of happy cows come from California.
Oh yeah,
from years past. Bull. I mean, it's
that's
just
bull offensive. Pun intended, by the way. So yeah, that's we know where the happy cows are, and
that's right,
and they're up here. The story actually comes out of Morris, Minnesota, a University of Minnesota campus out there. But for all of the caterwauling about solar farms that says, well, the crops won't be able to grow now and cattle won't be able to graze now. I was always a little dubious of that because like anything else, you know, you pick your shot. You use what is best for the land if you can. But if you can use a little creativity, then so much the better. And the story out of Minnesota is all about how a solar array, a whole bunch of solar panels, are put on top of basically an electric powered vehicle, a tractor, truck, whatever the case may be, that slowly moves along the field so that the cows can graze in the shade underneath the panels. I don't know if I have a particular climate question here. I'm just here to salute good old American ingenuity for getting the best of both worlds.
Yeah, this is such a cool story. I loved when you sent me this. I mean, talk about innovation. And like you said, using what you have. So this is, I think, just incredible to see the fact that, you know, we know that we have seen so many farmers and producers and folks in the ag industry be incredibly committed to climate solutions. And it is just great to see that, you know, you can do both things, right? Two things can be true at the same time, as my husband Joseph Pecky likes to say quite often. And that is that we can do right by the planet and continue doing business in a way that is going to be productive and beneficial. So, you know, I think this is a great example of that. And I hope to see, you know, more. I hope to see some farms in Wisconsin employing this approach because it seems really neat.
I've never been able to ask Melissa a personal question like this, but she has opened up the door for it. Tell me that Joseph Pecky has used that saying during discussions between the two of you to say, well, two things can be true at once. I didn't do the dishes and I was very busy today.
No. So he definitely uses it in personal conversation with mm-hmm. me and with the kids. But not to get out of his share of
the
household chores.
All right. The solar trailer, by the way, has a capacity of 60 kilowatt hours. The panels are equivalent to about 18 kilowatt hours. It obviously does not have a long extension cord, you know, that's tied to the grid. So you're powering these batteries that can then be used, you know, later on down the road. But again, it's just another way of saying that invention never stops. When I was there was a special legislative committee on biofuels, and there were a lot of people going, oh, ethanol is terrible for the plant, blah, blah, blah. But the research that's being done on biodiesel all across Wisconsin, and so that you need less of a carbon footprint, you know, to grow the corn or the different crops that make biofuels. I was just amazed by it. People wanted this knee-jerk reaction to oppose ethanol. look at the research and watch how it's evolving and unfolding. And that frankly, given where the Trump administration is, I think that's where we're going to get, you know, the positive stories is the ongoing role of innovation.
I agree. And that I'm going to use that to tie back to very briefly, and I'll make a point here, I promise, our conversation on the budget. And one of the reasons I think that the budget deal is the right one is because of the investment that is coming into our university system with this budget. When Republicans initially wanted to do nothing, and now we're going to get a big investment for the UW system. And, that's, you know, right, this story we see is in partnership, the project, with one of the University of Minnesota campuses.
Yep.
And the campus is carbon neutral now, thanks to their advancements in energy production. So perfect, we want to make sure that we can keep innovating on our campuses as well. That's very important to our progress.
Melissa Baldoff with our climate check and much more. Thanks, Melissa. Have a great 4th.
Thanks, you too.
All right, a local update is next for some of you, and the rest of you will come back here for some final news and notes and a visit with James Kelly. Remember, you can follow me at upnorthnewswi.com and, of course, right here mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Free Ticket Friday continues this week across Civic Media, including on this program, even though it will be a best of program on the 4th of July. It's a Friday. It will be a Free Ticket Friday, so be listening for that show. Some great segments that you might have missed from the past few weeks here, where we will also give the keyword to text in using the Civic Media app. That'll put you in the running for 4 great seats to a specific Brewers game. In fact, I can't tell you the keyword now. I am going to tell you, because we happen to know it, I'm going to tell you the game that it's for. So this coming Friday, we're going to be giving away 4 great seats at American Family Field to the game the following Friday against the Washington Nationals. So if you have any interest in that at all, you're going to want to tune in Friday morning throughout the show, 6 to 9 a.m., and you're going to have till the end of the show to text in the keyword that we're going to give you coming up on Friday as part of Free Ticket Friday with the Milwaukee Brewers. And again, doubleheader today, Brewers and Mets, 11:35 this morning for the pregame, making up the game that was rained out last night. Then again at 5:35 for Jacob Mazurowski pitching for the Brewers in game 2 against the Mets. James Kelly is here now to tell us about some of the stories that he's following for Civic Media out of our newsroom in Chippewa Falls. James, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Pat. How are you doing?
Good. Let's start with a nurses' strike in the Duluth Superior area. When is that supposed to get going? What's that issue there?
Yeah, so last week, the Minnesota Nurses Association voted to authorize these strikes. This week announced that they were going to be undertaking them starting next week. They're required to give the hospitals 10 days of notice so that they can, you know, get just fill in staff, figure out a staffing plan for their patients. Because even though unionizing and going on strike is the nurse's right, you also don't want patients to not have the care they need. So they're complaining of short staffing and just kind of being ignored by management when they say, our opinion as the people who are on the ground is we need more people.
Yeah. And that's also, you know, there's issues with nurses in Madison. It was the center of a state Supreme Court opinion from last week. But again, calling attention to the challenges in healthcare, especially in staffing, and whether some of that understaffing is by design rather than by circumstance. You've also been following the bill that was signed allowing a Superior utility company to get federal funds for lead service line replacements. Representative Angela Stroud visited with us just after 7 a.m. to talk all about what came along with that was the agreement that was reached that would reduce the cost for homeowners having those lead lines replaced. So either head over to civicmedia.us or Spotify or Apple and listen back to the show and hear all about it. And James will continue to follow developments on that as well. But I want to get right into the next story that you've been following because it's right down the road here. I can see St. Joseph's Hospital in Chippewa Falls, you know, across a couple of farm fields here. It's been shuttered up for over a year. And now the Chippewa Valley Health Cooperative Group is going to get set to open the doors again.
Yeah, and a lot sooner than I think most people would think. They were saying that it could open as early as August, kind of in a partial capacity, where they'll be doing some clinical services and could really offer the same services that St. Joseph's was offering before the closures by the end of the year. This is still kind of a temporary measure. It's not a permanent reopening of the hospital until they can get their new hospital in Lake Halley opened.
Yeah, so again, you've got the facilities there. They're not meant to be permanent, which is why a different hospital building is going to go up. But again, ever since HSHS, an Illinois-based system, shut down that hospital and Sacred Heart Hospital in Eau Claire and some Purveyor clinics abruptly last year, there's been a lot of people working behind the scenes to increase healthcare options. And by the way, the $15 million that the legislature allocated to help address this crisis never was released by the legislature, and Senator Jeff Smith told us in this segment yesterday he'd certainly be looking to see if that was included in the state budget agreement that the Assembly and the Senate are going to take up today. So no doubt James is going to be following that and following the money and seeing if it's in there. And if not, I'm sure Senator Smith and others will propose an amendment to the budget bill, and we'll see if it finally is a done deal. And let's end on some happy news about a bald eagle at a Raptor Animal Hospital up in the Spooner area.
Yeah, I always like to end on a little bit of a positive note. You know, go into the next show with everyone feeling good.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, so this eagle named Keir was rescued in critical condition from the Chippewa Flowage in September. Spent 10 months rehabbing at this Spooner Winged Freedom Raptor Hospital, and got dozens of skin grafts with fish skin, apparently. I didn't know that was a thing they could do, but that was an interesting part of the story as well, and had three surgeries. And then last week, they released the eagle back into the wild. Apparently, it had become a little bit of a community celebrity, so about 100 people came out to watch him get released into the wild, and he just kind of flew right into a nearby tree and started hanging out there. So maybe a little anticlimactic at the end.
Yeah, the problem, though, with the fish skin transplants is now all the other eagles have been trying to catch them and eat them. It's just, you don't bring a rim shot to the news very often, but sometimes fish skin transplants will allow you to do that. James Kelly, following all of that, thank you. Better late than ever, you know. Following everything at the Civic Media Newsroom in Chippewa Falls. Hope you've got a good, relaxing 4th of July weekend planned for you there.
Oh, plenty of fireworks show all around the area.
You can't miss that. Just get somebody to take you out into the middle of Lake Wissota, and then you get fireworks in the round, 360 degrees of it. So you get it wherever you are around here. It's Wisconsin, for goodness sakes. Everybody's got fireworks.
Yeah, I used to live in a beach town. I know what it's all about.
Oh, of course you do. Boy, this is a downer, but I'm going to say it from a public safety standpoint. I saw a post last week from some group as a public service announcement saying this weekend will be the last weekend that some people have 10 fingers.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, that's dark, but it's true.
Yeah. Well, we had back in Bayville where I grew up, one person put their big box of fireworks in the sand incorrectly, and it tipped over towards the beach where all the people were. Oh, so that was just about the scariest thing that could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. James, thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
Have a good one.
Let me close with this from Ardith on Facebook. This day is more proof that local elections matter. Fairer maps, excellent candidates, calling out Republicans by name who vote against bills that support the middle class. That'll all make Wisconsin shine again. I like the way Melissa Baldoff keeps sending this message loud and clear. Ardith, thank you very much for that note. Tomorrow, birthday cake. We'll explain. Coming up next, Matt Nair on Air. My thanks to today's guest and to all of you for being here. I'm Pat Kreitlow, founding editor of Up North News, part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network. Have a great day. See you tomorrow morning here up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.